the line to discuss this further is John Day, who is a U.S. attorney at law. John, thank you so much for chatting with us here on The Home Run. How does international law view Iran's missile strike on a U.S. base? Is it seen as self-defense or escalation?
Hello, thank you for having me. Well, you know, what's interesting about this is that this was really just a bit of a political theater, because as we've learned since last night, the Iranians contacted the Qataris, who contacted the Americans, who said this is what's going to happen, and they were not waved off by President Trump. And so internationally, as far as international law, it's theoretically you've got two states both claiming self-defense in this issue. But the fascinating thing is how it has apparently resolving, with a few minor bumps, and then this morning President Trump has been saying that he thinks that this ceasefire is going to hold. So in the context of international law, there's nothing theoretically violative of what the two countries are doing, because each is going to claim self-defense. But in the end of the day, you've had President Trump apparently claiming that he's brokered this lasting ceasefire, whether it holds, whether that's something that maintains past the first 24 hours remains to be seen.
The fact that it already was broken today, is there still a sense that it could hold? Legally, can it still hold even if it's broken?
Yeah, I think I think both sides are testing the waters, testing the boundaries. You had this display of anger from Trump today. He seemed especially, whether it was real or theatrical, I'm not sure, but he was especially critical of the Israelis, he thought, for responding to the Iranian attacks that came after the deadline for the ceasefire. But I think the expression of proof is in the pudding. I think waiting to see what the next, say, 12 to 24 hours holds. But the significant issue right now is how much damage was wrought on the Iranian program, how many of the leadership is actually left standing. And then you've got, from the U.S. perspective, you've got Trump claiming, and with some reason, that he has brokered this thing. And he has got a lot riding on it. His reputation as a deal maker, as a leader, is riding on how successful the ceasefire holds.
Can Trump enforce a ceasefire without congressional approval, especially after bypassing them on Operation Midnight Hammer, in which the United States struck three of Iran's nuclear sites?
Right. Well, that is the big internal debate here in the States, as far as the role of Congress significantly diminished under Trump, as we've seen. So the idea that Trump's enforcement powers really come from his how both sides perceive him, how both sides perceive his, I don't think instability is the word, his unpredictability, his willingness to take chances, his willingness to, I think as we saw with the bombing of the nuclear facilities, he had this 2-week window when in fact what was happening was he was planning to launch this attack, and the 2-week window was a ruse, which was obviously successful. So his power right now stems from his the idea that he will act unpredictably, which gives him a lot of leverage.
What legal implications could arise if Israel and Iran continue strikes after and under this U.S. brokering?
It's not so much a matter of the legal implications, although it is it's a good question to be asking. But there's nothing binding in terms of international law regarding the ceasefire that's been brokered, because it's simply an acknowledgement by both sides. And in fact, Prime Minister Netanyahu he's gotten everything essentially that he wanted out of this. And you have to acknowledge that he has acted with some skill in terms of his connections to the U.S. and his will and his ability to get done what he needed to get done from his perspective. But the ceasefire itself is simply a illusory sort of cloud in the sky that both sides are acknowledging, but there's nothing binding it. And the only fear is that at least from the Iranian side, what would restart if there was a violation of the ceasefire, what more damage could be brought on Tehran?
John, does Trump's growing frustration change the legal calculus for U.S. intervention?
You know, in a way, we've gone beyond that, the usual guidelines in terms of international law when it comes to Trump and dealing with. It's not to say that it's these are violations, but we're talking a whole new dimension when you have someone like President Trump being able to bring about, in a very short amount of time following the destruction of the nuclear facilities, when he's able to, within 24 hours, broker a theoretical ceasefire, and one that appears to be holding with a few mistakes here and there. But when that's in play, it raises questions about what is that law. I think these are bigger questions for more when you have more time, but the structure of international law when you have someone like Trump at play. And then the implications now are he's going to Amsterdam for the NATO summit, and he's on a roll. And I want to see I think it's fascinating to see what he's going to do next, because he's very confident. He has a very strong belief that his abilities are sort of unmatched. And so I think one of the key questions now is what's next, both in the Mideast and in the U.S. relations to Europe.
Yeah. Could U.S. direct attacks expose America to war powers challenges back home?
Yeah, and that's a question that's being debated. The response from the Democratic Party has been Trump needs to bring Congress in under our Constitution. And the response from Trump and the Republican Party is this is a different situation. This isn't a declaration of war. This is an immediate response to an immediate threat. And this is why it's becoming this fascinating internal struggle here, because we've never seen anything quite like this, the amount of challenge to congressional authority and the amount of abdication that the congressional leaders seem to have gone along with. So I don't know that there's an easy answer to that yet. But as long as there's public support for what Trump has done domestically, which there is, I don't see this as being any kind of impediment to him moving forward.
Where does American civilian protection fit in if Iran's proxies escalate attacks on U.S. bases or assets?
Yeah, that has been the concern. The idea that, are there sleeper cells of Iranian agents in the U.S.? Yeah. Are there groups or individuals or small cells that have instructions to wait until there's a moment to retaliate? I don't know. Obviously, the domestic security situation is on high alert here, and whether the ceasefire has any implication for sort of a lessening of that, that's unclear. But that is a concern here. There's a lot of domestic concern about whether there's some form of retaliation. We didn't see much after the Soleimani assassination, and whether this follows the same path remains to be seen.
Last question is, what is the legal significance of deploying a carrier strike group? Is it deterrence or preparation?
It's a good question, because I think when we brought three carrier groups into the region within the last couple of weeks. I think in Trump's mind, he's wielding this, he has this theory that he calls peace through strength. He didn't invent the words, but he is sort of putting his imprint on it. And I think this, the success of the last couple of days for him is vindication. And I think it means that we're going to see that play out. Now, the next area to be concerned about this or aware of this is going to be U.S. relations with China, but that's a topic for another day, I think.